Welcome to the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. Celebrating 50 years with you. Home of the Big Red Chair.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
And welcome. Good morning. Good Saturday. Good weather. Hey, I think we're almost into summer, or perhaps we are. We have 2 hours talking about home improvement, all things around your home, office, building, safety, health, anything that is supported or detracted from your health, safety, building science, whatever it is. If you just want the lights to turn on when you hit the switch, we can call and talk about that here on University of KMOX. If when you flip the switch on the disposer and something doesn't happen, we can talk about the key and the safety reverse and don't put your hands down in there, things like that. Right here, KMOX, Scott Mosby at the helm. Phone lines wide open for you. 314-436-7900, 436-7900. Toll free, 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. 2 hours, the Helitech Home Improvement Show. Scott Mosby at your service right here on the weekend show. We're going to talk about things for 2 hours today, all about your home. You are the topic. We're going to talk about what it's like to get outside again and, really socially gather. Perhaps the patio is going to become even more of a mainstay as it did during the whole past year, COVID and pandemic stuff. We learned to gather outdoors and we learned to gather indoors. Indoors was a much smaller event. Outside, always good. Now we're into spring, and we will sneak up to the morning and the evenings around St. Louis in the Midwestern area, and it's just grand temperatures. We've had good rain, so everything just popped out blooming green. Always nice. I love the, I complain about the humidity. Maybe you do too, that close feel that we get in July and August. But you know what? All this beauty, the green, the blooms, the grass, everything supported by that rain, that humidity, everything that counts. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. My name is Scott Mosby. I own Mosby Building Arts. We were founded in 1947 by my dad. I've forgotten a lot of stuff. I remember a lot of stuff, but I am your research and development arm. I'm the guy that made all the mistakes for you. I've made them all, sometimes two, hopefully not three times. But by golly, I've learned from everyone, and I work very, very hard not to make those same mistakes again. I can help you. So do-it-yourselfers, come on, bring it on. 314-436-7900. We'll figure out how to get this thing done. I've done this all of my life. I'm a second-generation builder, remodeler. We have, within Mosby Building Arts, my day job, we have a full architectural firm. We have a full aging in place or accessibility design staff, everything that it takes to pick up and pick out and design cabinets. So we have a full design cabinet, certified kitchen designers, certified bath designers, all of that stuff, licensed architects. We are the entire, what is business-wide called vertically integrated. Basically, anything that doesn't work or is too slow, unresponsive in the construction business, that's what we move into next. So it's just making things more streamlined. And right now, the least streamlined thing, although I'm not really looking to get into the supply business, but a shortage. Lumber, refrigerators, sinks, faucets, flooring, wire, all the materials for aluminum, vinyl. Because all of these industries, if you think about this, and we can talk about this or not, but what is affecting completion dates, which I think we're still at 96.5. We have an app on our phone that gives us a real-time, on-time completion. So we do watch that very carefully, and I keep an eye on that as well. But it's the supply material availabilities. So the concept in manufacturing, for all of you industrial engineers out there, you know this so well, that you're only as good as your weakest link. And the weakest link now is the international supply and COVID response. And, so then think about this. During the COVID, everybody wanted to get out. So RVs, manufactured housing as far as mobile homes, things like that, windows got popped. So all of a sudden, now we've got this downturn and disruption in supply and manufacture. And oh, by the way, the RV industry wants all of the aluminum. Yeah. I mean, just all these different things that are taking off recreationally now that we're not in offices at work and have more recreational family time, how do we spend it? So all of that touches the housing industry. You hear about lumber and the price of that, copper, things like that. Those are only the two and few. It's all the way through everything. So if you've ever gone to shop for a refrigerator, it's a new world. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Let's go to the phone line, see what's happening, and let's talk with Kim. Hey, Kim, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help?
Hi, Scott. We have a shed that was built onto the side of the house when the house was built.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the back of the house, which the back of the house, because the house is built into a hill, is two stories there. But the shed is just one story attached into, like, the house is L-shaped back there.
Okay. And the inside of the L there?
Yes.
Okay.
And the one end of the L is basement that it's, you know, it's not open. It's just attached there. It's basement.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of the L, the long side, is garage that is not heated or cooled. The basement side is. The other two sides are exposed to the exterior and has vinyl siding on one side and a door on the other. An access door.
Okay.
So we had a bunch of termite damage, so we had to dig into it.
Mm-hmm.
And taking the wood off the vinyl side, vinyl-sided side,
yeah.
Pulling that back, there was insulation in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there isn't any insulation on the ceiling of it. There is on the garage side. When we put this back together, should we put insulation back on that vinyl side or not?
Will it remain dry and safely separated from future termite access?
Good question.
Because isolating, my answer is yes. When you get a chance to insulate, do it. However, if you're going to build a nice little habitat for critters and termites, you know, because insulation will hold moisture and humidity more so and longer than other building materials. So my point is that before you put that vinyl siding back on, I would personally put a roofing membrane on there, like a peel-and-stick roofing material, kind of a, you know, ice and water shield. Anything that termites can't and won't eat, because they can't do asphalt, and they can't do asphalt roof cement because it gums up their jaws and they just can't deal with it. So I would build that wall, like, not for water reasons, but for limiting the access of critters, and glue it so much, because if you just stick it on the wall without really smearing it with asphalt roof cement, something really nasty, they will burrow underneath that ice and water shield because the adhesive kind of lets go after time. You following me there?
Yes, but we weren't going to take the vinyl off. We were going to do this from the inside.
Okay, okay.
Well, so, because right now, the wood that they destroyed is just that. I don't even know what it's called. It's thinner than press board, mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
It's just that on that side, and then if you take that off, you have the studs,
mm-hmm.
and a bunch of insulation that's pretty nasty.
Sure.
Then you know the vinyl's right on the framing.
Yeah, I would personally pull that vinyl siding off, because Mother Nature and the termites have already said thank you very much. This is our front door. So I would, and you can get, there's what's called a zip tool. You can unlap that vinyl siding. You have to be very careful with it so you don't break it, because it gets brittle. But unlap mm-hmm. that, pull the nails, and roof that newly replaced sheathing material, whatever it is. I would roof that thing up so that termites coming up from the foundation on that concrete, that, and put that ice and water shield up 12, 18 inches, something like that, and just don't make it easy for termites to get to your new wood.
Okay.
You see where I'm going?
Okay.
And
yeah, they've only penetrated the really thin wood. They didn't get into the solid framing stuff.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the structure. This is just about future visitors. And you're already halfway there now.
Right.
On water and termites, when you think you're done, go two steps more. Buy extra insurance. the money you spend will never be less than today.
Okay. So, well, I appreciate the info. It's not exactly what I wanted to hear, of course, but...
Well, I promise you, Kim, you will sleep better 3 years from now when it's like, oh, yeah, we went way over. And good night.
Well, I appreciate the info, and you have a lovely day. I love your services you give.
Thanks, Kim. Take care. All righty.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX, famous for anything worth doing is overdoing. And in the high-risk areas, when you get to termite, you get to roof leaks, you know, persistent roof from ice and water and snow buildup and all that stuff, when you think you're done, go one step too far, two steps too far. And then when we get a 22-inch snowfall and that snow just sits in your roof 2 feet deep, you've got it covered anyway. Or when the termites knock on your door and tell you, thank you very much, we're coming in on the L-shaped, you know, between your storage shed and the foundation, go too far. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. KMOX at your service. We'll be right back for more after this.
This is the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. Celebrating 50 years with you. Home of the Big Red Chair.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
Oh, yeah. Home Improvement. 2 hours today. Stay tuned. Retire ready. And then Cardinal Baseball today on KMOX. Next up, let's talk with Delilah. Hey, Delilah. Good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How may I help?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a St. Charles kitchen, which is furniture steel. And I'm having it done by professionals, but I discovered a few spots of rust inside on some shelving.
Uh-huh.
So I have sanded it. I've used a tack rag. Mm-hmm. Now I have a spray kills primer that I want to put on next. And my question is, with the tack rag, do I expect that my surface is still going to feel tacky? And is that okay before I spray the primer?
No, not really. The tack rag is for picking up dust and effectively leaves no real residue. And if you're going to prime it on the inside of that cabinet, if it's a Kills, I would like it to be a solvent base, the real smelly stuff. Latex-based or water-based, that's okay, and it's pretty good, but it doesn't really shield like a solvent-based, what you would think of as an oil-based paint, or in this case, a shellac-based, which is what makes the Kills so stinky, is it's literally shellac. So, should not be tacky, and you can do the same thing with mineral spirits, wiping it with a tack rag. So a professional version of a tack rag is a cotton, clean towel with mineral spirits on it.
Okay, and then I think, okay, so back to the spray primer that I have. It reads Kills Original Interior Primer. That I was planning to use, and then come across with the original color that was on these cabinetry. So, is that Kills Original Interior Primer? Is that okay, or what do you say?
Oh, I think it's probably a water-based paint. Look on the back and see what you clean it up with. If it says
here at the bottom, it says white oil-based.
Perfect, perfect. That stuff will smell. It is very pungent. And that's what makes it seal, because it's shellac-based, which is alcohol-based for soft. So none of what you're going to put on with your color coat, the actual color of the inside you want, that's not really going to chew into that paint or dissolve it. So that's the advantage of the solvent-based Kills-type primer.
Okay, so just a cotton, clean cotton rag and some mineral spirits will make it better better surface for my Kills to go on.
Yep, and when I'm at home and I just don't have thinner mineral spirits like that, which are the same thing, I get some rubbing alcohol out of the medicine cabinet and a paper towel, and I get at it. So, I mean, for small jobs around the house, I am a large consumer of isopropyl alcohol, more so even now with the COVID thing. I've been wiping everything down for a year.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for your help.
Okay. Take care, Delilah.
Bye.
Bye now. Home improvement, Scott Mosby, man, off and running, shed, termites, priming the inside of kitchen cabinets. Hey, have you noticed the real estate market, how hot that thing is? Well, I'm a kind of an armchair economist, so I want to know, well, you know, what is next? And that's part of my job is figuring out what's next. And I travel and connected on a national basis with other remodeling companies like Mosby Building Arts as well. And part of what I'm learning is, well, the millennial generation is just now of first home buying age and many in the move-up home buying. So this shortage of housing and demand for houses at all levels isn't going to change soon. So they're forecasting another 3 years, 2 to 3 years. And then really, you know, because of the amount of national spending we're doing on a federal level, sooner or later, that will have its consequences. So turn down a couple of years, you know, 2023 is my latest. And, you know, this is a source of kind of a real estate research firm. And I just, and the name of that is John Burns Real Estate. And they pretty much look forward and think, well, builder guys, if you think you're busy now, you're not going to get a break for 2 years. So people asking me questions about, you know, lumber cost, copper cost for electrical wiring, fixtures, plumbing, demand for those services. Word I get is we've got another 2 year run that's foreseeable. And then outside of that 2 years, it's hard to understand because, you know, it's just too far in the future. But anyway, my point being for the KMOX Home Improvement Show, we're going to be busy for a while. 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Let's talk to my friend Diane. Diane, good morning. Welcome to KMOX on Saturday. How can I help?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because I've got a master bath issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought a house. And they put this, I don't understand what they did. It's a cultured marble. It's all cultured marble. So the shower stall, and then we have a garden tub, and then the step on the garden tub, and then also the sink.
Yep.
And the sink had, you know, a regular, the sink part of it, and then the countertop, you know, all in one piece.
Yes.
They somehow or another put a above the sink piece on top of it, and it doesn't look like it's broken or anything. It's not broken anywhere from on the top, on the underneath side,
mm-hmm.
but they sealed it, and we cannot figure out. I mean, we just figured we're just going to have to take the whole thing off. So now what I want to find out is, what are the current trends? What do I need to do? Do I need to replace it with something exactly the same? Are there any trends that you can do complementary? What, and you know, what are the current ideas for me?
Are you trying to keep the same lavatory countertop and change the bowl, or are you willing to change the whole countertop of just that?
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm changing the whole countertop, and I have two large cabinets that are sitting on top that we're going to have to, you know, also take off and then re-put on and all that kind of thing.
Perfect.
As well.
You really have no restrictions, Diane, and I like where you're going because you can leave the garden tub alone, the tub deck, and all of that stuff. That countertop can come right off of those cabinets, and you're welcome to do granite. You're welcome to do any kind of a stone, any kind of an onyx, a man-made cultured onyx. I would advise to stay away from the cultured marble because that stuff yellows. So if you were to buy that exact same cultured marble, just like new paint and old paint, golly, you'd be stunned how yellowed, how ultraviolet light had changed that cultured marble. And
that's what we were told, and that's why I thought, okay, so
yeah,
So do I pick an opposite color, or do you just does anybody just pick any color? Do you match
tile on
the floor? Well, how do you match?
Well, it's like picking a garment. So frankly, if your shoes are brown and your hair is blonde and you have a very rosy complexion, then some combination of those colors would be the dress, the shirt, the suit, whatever it is, whether male or female. But you and I do this stuff all the time, dressing for the day. So just think of the countertop. If you want to tie it together, that's a little bit tough because you have to really nail those colors. You know, the floor, you have to get that. So you need a tile sample. The paint, you need a paint sample, and you have to take that with you to the granite place. Every granite fabricator has a boneyard where they had huge slabs of very expensive granite, and then they have a leftover piece or scrap, and they will sell it for pennies on the dollar. So you can find scraps in what's called, we call them the boneyard. It's a slang for that. But every stone fabricator and most of the suppliers have breakage in their warehouse. So everybody's got some of this stuff laying around. So don't get too bold unless you get a professional designer in there to help you pick out that wowzer color, you know, the countertop that's going to be brilliant red or whatever. Unless you have professional advice, don't go there and just kind of moderate through that. But it does have to be a contrast. It can't be too close. So if you think of your floor in accessibility when for aging eyes, the way we describe floor to countertop to wall or floor to cabinet to countertop, it's a 1-3-5. So you want those colors to be enough different that if you have a countertop the same color as the floor, at 2 a.m. when you go in there for a cup of water, you can't tell where the floor and where the countertop start and stop. So there are a lot of things that we as humans use to navigate by, especially in low light and then low vision abilities too. So my point is get enough of a contrast, coordinate the colors, or if you really have a really good design eye, you can go to the wow countertop. But that tends to be striking, impactive, and sometimes too trendy to last long.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Diane, happy hunting.
Take care. Thanks.
Right. Bye now. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. Again, a little bit of help from my cohorts at work. They've trained me to at least understand how not to mess things up. So for Diane's question, I'm kind of ready for that, having been the builder that put in some of these incredible color combination. It's like, are you serious? We're going to put in this? Holy. And then we put it together and it all comes together because that one or maybe the countertop is the piece of tight. Like, wow, man. So I'm smart enough to know people who know. I'm not smart enough to know the color, although I'm pretty well trained by now. Anyway, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. All of the mistakes I've made and more right here on KMOX to keep you in the straight, narrow, center, and line path highway of success. Back for more after this.
This is the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. Celebrating 50 years with you. Home of the Big Red Chair.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
All right, Scott Mosby here, Home Improvement, and we are live and lively. There is an accessible design, Living Life to the Fullest seminar coming up May 26th. May 26th, that's 4 days from now. And that is a webinar, 11:30, right in the middle. It's a kind of a lunchtime event, 11:30 to 12:30. You can log on and check out Mosby Building Arts or call Mosby.com. For those of you that are memory impaired like myself, it's C-A-L-L, like telephone, call Mosby, or MosbyBuildingArts.com. But it's 11:30 to 12:30, May 26th. Accessible design, and that's really about kitchens, bathrooms, hallways, handles, levers, entries for front doors, all those sorts of things that matter. So you can log on and participate that way. Let's go to the phones and talk with my old friend Joan. Hey, Joan, how you doing? Scott Mosby here. How can I help?
Good morning, and I hope we're old friends. I've been calling you. You've helped me out a lot of times.
Good. Glad to help.
Well, I had my kitchen fan, which has a light in it.
Mm-hmm.
I went to turn it on the one day just turn the light on. The light kind of flickered. It wouldn't go on. I flicked the switch again and nothing. So when my daughter came over, I told her, I said, I need a light bulb up in my fan.
Uh-huh.
So when she goes to take it out, guess what? The light bulb separates.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah, and the old potato trick didn't work.
Yep.
So I said, that means I got to call my home insurance. So when he came out, he looks at it, just standing on the floor. He says, I think you need a new fan. He takes out a pair of pliers out of his pocket and picks on it and breaks the Bakelite socket that's in the fan.
Yeah.
And anyway, to cut a long story short, the information that I got, my contract said ceiling fans covered all parts and components. Mm. So I'm, you know, not too worried about it. I just, well, they'll bring me a new fan or I'll go buy a new fan or whatever. Well, whatever it was, they were going to make me take a white fan. I said, I don't want a white fan. I've got a beautiful wood fan up there and all this wood in the kitchen. I said, I don't want a white fan. Well, then you have to go buy your own, and then we buy the contract, the job out or whatever, you know, pay me to get it repaired then. So then I find out I might have to have a fan-approved box up in there. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And they said, well, it's a state requirement. Not all states have it, but a lot of states do, and Missouri happens to be one of them.
Yeah.
So then I'm all upset over that. Well, was it going to tear up my ceiling? What's going to happen here, you know? Well, anyway, the gist of it is I have to go buy my own fan, and I've hired an electrician that's going to come next week. And when I'm buying the fan I had up there had one light bulb in it.
Okay.
The one I want to buy has got three light bulbs on the outside, you know,
yes.
Because I need more light.
Yeah.
With that one light bulb and a globe over it, it didn't get very much light.
Sure.
Okay, what I'm wondering, am I going to have a problem because I'm going to take three little light bulbs against the one light bulb?
No. No.
There won't be any wiring difficulty there anything?
No, they wire all three of those sockets together so they all come on as one unit when the fan gets installed. And the reality is one 100-watt light bulb incandescent, which is where your house was built. So that wiring, that load, that switch, all the capacity of electrical stuff was designed for 60 watt or 100 watt. Well, if you put three LED bulbs in that fan, and it's really hard to buy a fan that is not LED, it's a third of that load. You put three bulbs in there at 12 watts a piece, you know, that's 360 watt light bulb equivalents, and you've only used up a third of 100 watt of a normal old incandescent light bulb. So, I mean, I had this conversation.
How big a wattage is the bulbs again, please?
Oh, they're like 12 volt. I mean, a 12 watt LED puts out about the same equivalent light as a, you know, 100 watt light bulb.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so you get plenty of, it's a different color.
I was just wondering about the wiring, if that was something else I had to worry about, because I was going to put, you know, up there three little light bulbs versus the one big light bulb and with a globe on it.
And I'll tell you, when the fan gets installed, that box, how old is your house, Joan?
Built in 82.
See, it probably has a fan approved. I mean, if it had a ceiling fan on it before, most builders would have put up, or all it is put a 2x4 up and screw the box to it so the fan doesn't fall off the ceiling. That's what that's all about.
And the hole is big enough for it to go up through there? I mean, you know, the base of the fan, the part that fits against the ceiling is going to be big enough?
There are retrofit pieces. They're pricey, and they take time because you have to unwire that whole electrical box and pull the wires out and kill the circuits. So, I mean,
maybe they were going to charge me $225.
That could easily be appropriate.
I said, I've been paying, you know, so much money a month for my contract, and then for them to come back and tell me that, I said, you're telling me, I said, that isn't a component? I said, I could see it wouldn't be a part of the fan, but wouldn't it be a component?
Well, I served for years. I served for years on the Better Business Bureau and chaired that for a bit. And what consumers expect, you know, from a logical point, and what the contract says, this is not a rare conversation. So, yeah, you're not alone.
It sounds crazy when I tell them, well, if it says they're going to pay for it, why aren't they paying for it? I said, to a point, they'll pay for it. But I said, they're not going to give me the fan I want,
right?
And they're not going to pay for this other box or whatever it is.
Well, my point, Joan, is there's a 60% chance that that box is already a Missouri State approved anyway.
Back as far as 82?
Yeah.
I hope.
That's my opinion.
They don't wear out, huh?
Well, I mean, they're just so easy to screw in and make secure that, you know, most electricians back when, they knew if a fan was going up, they just put a couple extra screws and a 2x4 in, and, you know, that was good enough. They just don't want these things falling on you and me.
Yeah, right. And I had no problems with this fan whatsoever until, you know.
Yeah, generally they wobble and move if they're just, you know, connected by a metal rod. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I think the probability is on your side. And here's the bottom line. Get the fan you want. Get it installed the right way. And, you know, bite the bullet. Because if you cut it short for whatever reason on this insurance thing and you don't get, after all this effort, you don't get what you want, you'll remember that one.
Yeah, that's what my daughter says. Yeah. She says that you get a decent electrician to put it up there, one that you trust, not one that they send out.
Yeah.
The ones that they send out are usually, well.
Yeah, those insurance companies are made to benefit investors, not necessarily the customers.
So all you people out there with home warranties, read them carefully.
Amen. Amen. Thanks, Joan.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. Home Improvement, we're going to take a short pause for now and come right back for more after this on KMOX.
This is the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. Celebrating 50 years with you. Home of the Big Red Chair.
Now, Scott Mosby on the voice of St. Louis KMOX.
All right, back together. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, University of KMOX. Follow me on Odyssey, AUDACY, Odyssey.com. The Odyssey app at the Apple Store or on Odyssey.com or KMOX.com. But anyway, the point being that you can take me and all of your favorite KMOXers with you with that Odyssey app. Let's go talk to my buddy. Let's see what's cooking with Warren. Hey, Warren, good morning. How can I help you, my friend?
Hey, Scott.
Yes.
I've got a problem with the possums showing up in the yard. They're feeding on the neighbor's bird feeder, and when they came back across the yard, I couldn't tell if they were going into a burrow or what. So,
yeah, until you remove two choices there. Until you remove the food source, which is working it out with your neighbors, and that means stop feeding the birds because...
Yeah, well, that probably won't happen.
Well, then you're in trouble. Then bring in a predator, a hawk. We've had sightings of black bears. We've got coyotes running around now. So all of this stuff is all in play. So if you can't stop feeding them, then maybe they could feed something else. So it's more of the predator type thing. Owls are very handy for that. Possums tend to not go where their young are not safe. So the point is either scare them, eat them, or stop feeding them. And that means, you know, the predators eat them. They really need to be removed because they will come back. The young will come back next year because
yeah,
that's where the food
source
is.
Catching them and relocating them.
Oh, yeah, they'll come back.
They come back. Huh?
They come back. Yeah, I don't know how they do that, but they are territorial like most animals, and they will, especially if there's a food source, they'll be back. Yeah, I'm not optimistic about that. You could try a plastic owl. You could try owl noises out there because even the sound or threat of owls and hawks are kind of a deterrent to that. But really, it's, if you can't remove the food source, you're in trouble because, I mean, wouldn't you and I love food, you know, free? All we have to do is show up and live next door.
Well, you know, everybody has their rights, and you tell your neighbor he can't put birdseed out, that's not going to go over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're very clever. They will burrow. So keeping, you know, even if you have a fence, it's a big deal to keep them out. They're not really a rodent. They're a marsupial, but still, they're like mice and squirrels. You know, they can get through a little bitty hole. Or raccoons. Bring some raccoons in. They'll mess with the possums a little bit, but they're even more damaging than opossums are. But it really is around the food source, period. And, you know, that you'd be surprised how many rats we have in suburban St. Louis County because of bird feeders. Yeah.
All right.
I wish I had better news for you, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you didn't really tell me anything I didn't know, but...
Yeah. That's usually how, expert advice goes. Frankly, many of our designers show up at people's houses and they say, that's just what I was thinking. It's like, well, yeah, you've been thinking about this a long time and it's your home. So oftentimes, another opinion just fortifies the one you already have. So you were right without me. All I did was vote right there with you.
Well, it's the fact that I woke up early one morning and saw it wobbling across the yard.
Yeah. I will tell you that I've lived with opossums in my backyard for a long time. They're no longer there. They took up residence someplace else, but a neighbor moved out, no longer feeding the birds, and they just kind of moved along. But I never really saw any damage from them. So, maybe it's not that big a risk because they generally are, not ever seen and not ever heard. They just kind of rumble and mumble around.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks, Scott.
Okay, Warren. Good luck, my friend.
All right.
And some of this is, frankly, what's the risk, as we're discussing with Warren. Possums, they can be a burrowing issue. But, for the most part, golly, most people that have an opossum for a neighbor don't even know it because they, they're nocturnal. They come out and they feed at night. They aren't going to tear down the bird feeder by climbing up the pole like a raccoon will. They just, feed off the ground and, they're a food. They clean up the trash around there. They eat carrion. So any critters that have been, unlucky on the road or around or whatever, opossums tend to clean up all the stuff nobody else wants to clean up. So they're really not bad neighbors. But I will say that, I'm an early riser. I would get up and, have my morning coffee about 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and here they come ambling, rambling across the backyard, and I never really saw any adverse, effects from them being my neighbors. Anyway, we've got hour two coming up here next. Retire Ready comes up at 1 o'clock. Cardinal baseball on after that, right here on KMOX.
Welcome to the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show.
Presented by Suburban Leisure Center. Celebrating 50 years with you. Home of the Big Red Chair.
Now, Scott Mosby on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Lunchtime, top of the hour, middle of the day, bean time. Put a few shrimp on the barbie. We're going to have some lunch here on KMOX. Come on into the classroom, have a seat, belly up to the bar. We're going to have the Home Improvement Show, the Helitech Home Improvement Show, right here on KMOX. Finished up the last the 11 o'clock hour here on KMOX, with Warren asking about how to get rid of his opossums from a bird feeder next door. If he can't remove the food source, it's really tough. I had a friend text in, opossums eat ticks at an incredible rate, and that benefits maybe slowing the Lyme disease. So I have a friend that really got bitten by a tick and frankly can't eat meat anymore. So these ticks are rather interesting because it caused an anaphylactic response, which means his throat closed. He was very allergic to beef, pork, meat. I thought that was pretty interesting. I never heard of that from a tick bite. So anyway, opossums eat ticks. Maybe you want them as a neighbor. They were, I had them for neighbors for quite some time, longer likely than I ever knew. But other than watching them amble slowly through my backyard occasionally, I never really noticed that they were there. So everything has its place. Every place has its thing. And apparently opossums are tick eradicators. Pretty good deal. 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Scott Mosby, downtown St. Louis, locked in a room. They won't let me out till 1 o'clock. So I'm going to keep talking about home improvement and helping you as much as I can. We're going to get to the phone lines here in just a bit, but I do have some open phone lines. 314-436-7900. Bring them on. 800-925-1120. Keep in mind that as we go forward into the summer, we will gather, we will interact. I'm just now... what is the proper etiquette for shaking hands? I'm a hugger. So I've been on a 1.5-year hiatus from hugging. So I don't quite hug. I'm still doing virtual hugs for the most part. Handshakes, I'm bold, but anyway, it's, so I kind of hold my hand out. If somebody responds, you know, we shake hands. But it's still kind of a, you know, I'm aware of that nervousness in me. That anyway, that brings us to our next phone caller. Let's see if we can see what's cooking here with my friend Craig. Craig, thanks for lunchtime here on KMOX. Welcome. How can we help? Hello, Craig. Are you there?
Oh, yes, Scott. I'm here.
Yes, sir.
Enjoy your program every week. And a few months ago, we had Gila Tech out, and they raised a sinking patio using that new system that replaced mud jacking, and they did a great job.
Thank you.
And several weeks ago, I'm calling today because you were discussing an ultraviolet light virus-killing system for furnaces.
Yes.
And I kind of came in on the tail end of that. I wonder if you would discuss that, and how do these systems differ from air cleaner systems like HEPA filters or other air cleaners? Do you recommend that the people have both for their house, or would you discuss those? I would appreciate it.
Okay, a HEPA filter, high-efficiency particulate filter, basically, HEP. So it just stops dust and pollen and solids. So a filter... and it's just like a coffee filter, only it's bigger openings in it. So it's just a HEPA is just it takes out smaller particles than a standard furnace filter. So that's different than something that goes after bacteria and viruses. So the ultraviolet, basically, viruses don't do well in the sunlight and the outdoors. Thus, the whole COVID thing of, you know, if you stay 6 feet apart, you don't need masks outdoors. Most of the viruses don't last very long because of the ultraviolet light. Well, this is not related to COVID, though it became. When we had the flu and we had terrible outbreaks of flus, and, you know, it is what it is. And these are just kind of black lights that mount inside of a duct return air system in a furnace, and the lights go on when the blower goes on. So effectively, it makes the sunshine, ultraviolet light exposure, to any little particles that come by, whether dust or bacteria. So a standard furnace filter, for example, when this COVID thing hit, somebody called and asked me about it, and I thought, well, golly, you know, why in the world don't I have this on my furnace? So I had the lights installed, and I leave the blower motor on all the time. So, you know, whenever I have people in the house, I run that blower motor. Well, it's running all the time anyway, but now that UV light is on, it is very effective for bacteria and viruses, flu, COVID, all the rest. And they can get kind of pricey, but they're pretty low tech. All it is a light bulb that comes on, and, you know, all then the ultra, the UL lab listings for safety and such. But so having both is fine, but a furnace filter, you don't need anything whiz bang on that. But a great furnace filter, even a HEPA, isn't really going to knock out any viruses and flus and bacteria.
Okay. What companies make these ultraviolet systems?
I don't know. This is where I'm a generalist, and I know the heating and cooling wizards. And basically my question to them is, do you have one in your home? Yes. Which brand do you have in your home? Are there any bells and whistles that get added to that? Nope, I got the top of the line. Well, if it's good enough for you, brother, it's good enough for me. And that's pretty much how I buy is, you know, what do you have in your home? So.
Okay, I appreciate the information on those systems very much. Thank you.
Craig, I will tell you this. One of the callers that got me, that finally basically tripped my mind to, you know, Scott, you're the expert. Why don't you have one of these things? He had one installed. And he was commenting how the dust particles, he had a very dusty house for the next few days after having these UV lights installed. And then he said, you know, the dust particles, he says, you know, when the sun shines through the blinds and you look at your, you know, tabletops and countertops, he said, the dust subsided. So apparently it also affects the dust. So I found that interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into that because our air conditioning and heating system is 30 years plus old, so I think we're about ready for a new system?
Oh, I think this will be presented to you, certainly with this COVID. Any heating and cooling company that is not offering that feature when you're selecting equipment, if you've got 30-year-old equipment, this is a no-brainer. And frankly, to have one put in, you know, you're paying, I think I paid like $800 or $850 or $1,000 for the first, and I think the second one was $500, because once they're changing the equipment, you know, they're already there. The only thing that changes is a little bit more, you know, material costs. So.
Right. Very good. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your show. Listen every week.
Craig, thanks for the question. This is a particularly timely product and question. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Home Improvement, KMOX. Again, this is, you know, how does this show work? What is the value to Metropolitan St. Louis and the KMOX family? This came from a question. I opened the show and I was talking about ultraviolet lights and how those things. Well, one of the callers called in and he said, you know, I had one of those things put on. How did it change my life? Well, I've had servicemen and people in and out of the house for a while, and I would just turn that blower motor on. Those lights were on. I'd open all the doors and the windows and pretty much vacate the premises as much as I could. And this was at the height of COVID. You know, sometimes you just have to get things fixed and take care of business. And it was just convenient and happy to have that. But the point being is this all came from a listener, one of the KMOX families, telling me about his experience, which changed my life. I put this in my home. I have the blower motor running right now. That UV light is cooking and killing and you know, makes me feel good. I don't know whether it's working or not, but I will tell you that nobody in that house got sick. That doesn't mean it's from that particular thing, but, you know, all I have to do is show up, do my best, and that's the best I can do. And, you know, after that, I have to let it go. And I have. So anyway, that's kind of neat stuff. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. We can talk about this and more, any topic you want to talk about. Keep in mind, we've now as we go into the new part of the year, that just be aware how much your windows and doors, the conditions of those, because it's time to make sure your screens are on and in good repair. Get them to the screen repair. Call a screen repair guy. Take it to the hardware store. Whatever it is, get your screens working. Make sure your window locks are working, your weather strip on windows, the balances, you know, the things that help you lift up windows open and close, or if you have casement windows that hinge side to side like a door, make sure all that hardware is operating and things lock as well. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Scott Mosby at your service, back for more. All right, lunchtime, middle of the day, University of KMOX. Plenty of seats here in the classroom. Come on in and have a seat. If you have a question, dial 314-436-7900, or maybe I should say punch in 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Let's go right to the phone lines, talk to my buddy Don. Hey, Don, how you doing this fine day? How can I help you, sir?
Well, everything was good until I came home from my doctor's appointment.
Uh-oh.
I went out to pick up a package that was delivered by UPS. And when I looked at the window in my front door, I saw a bunch of winged ants, looks like. They were black.
Sure.
And there were some little ones. Uh-huh. So I thought, where the hell did they come from? So I opened up the door and I shooed them out. And I did notice that I did bring another package in that I got yesterday from FedEx.
Okay.
And so I went back out to check the mail, and there was another group of them.
Huh.
I thought, so I took a flashlight, and I went all over the house, all over the front porch, looking for it, and I looked around the door and went outside. I couldn't find where they was getting in at.
Yeah.
And now this morning, I don't see any, but they were black with wings.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, this is...
termite is brown, ain't it, with wings?
I couldn't answer that. I typically grab a couple of the bugs and I put them in a Ziploc bag and I give them to the termite guy. And frankly, that's it. But keep in mind, any flying insect like that, you're asking the right question, you're concerned about it, I would call somebody for an inspection to come. Look, I will say this, don't get overly worried about this, because this is the season when termites and ants and colonies swarm, and bees do it as well. So all these critters are moving around looking for a new home, new place to live.
I had a swarm of bees that got into the side of my house, and I was going to try to get Terminex to come over and get rid of them.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I had the code guy over to see if I could do something else to my property. And he says, you can't kill those bees. Those are endangered species now.
Yeah. Well, you're better off calling a beekeeper. They would love to have the bees because our whole world and food system seem to be dependent upon the pollination of those little flying critters.
Well, then they swarmed and then they left. And I don't know. I had them there for about 11 years.
Wow.
So, hey, what's the name of that ultraviolet light system you was talking about?
That's just the name of it. There are all kinds of brands. You know, it's a generic thing. And there are many brands, and some have been around longer than others. It's just so I can't really tell you what brands I typically.
Okay, now what do? You just hook it into your furnace?
Yeah, you just basically call the heating and cooling guy. It has to be installed properly. It has to be installed with the blower motor and all so that it comes on at the right time. And as soon as you start running air through your ductwork, i.e., your fan system comes on, or you turn your blower to on or auto when it comes on. This light comes on, and it just kills bacteria and viruses as they come flying by.
And you also said it kind of keeps the dust down, too?
Yeah, I can't really attest to that. I don't have that. I haven't really paid attention to it. But this guy said, you know what? It really, this was not one of the features I expected, but this is what happened to me. He said, there's just a lot less dust in this house.
My electronic air filter went out, so it's probably better if I just went and got one of those.
Yeah. The electronic air filter has kind of the same effect as this, but they're a lot noisier and I think much more expensive. This is pretty low-tech stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's about 20 years ago.
We haven't put in too many electronic air filters for a long time. Most of them just go to the 3- and 4-inch big, thick filtration systems, and then we wind up putting on this AC or this ultraviolet.
Yeah, that's what
thing.
I got the big, thick filtration thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I thank you very much. So I'll get a hold of the termite guy or bug guy.
Yeah, and don't be too worried about it. He may come out and say, well, I think you're okay, but, you may want to treat. So I don't know. That's a choice on your part as to...
Well, I thought maybe they came in on the package,
Well, they can. Cardboard is cellulose, and they can most definitely come in on cardboard.
Well,
so.
Yeah, about coming in. Hey, tell your friends that's got dogs, if they use straw for bedding, do not use it because fleas usually crawl up in those tubes of the straw, and they hibernate in there, and then they'll reproduce in the straw.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. That makes perfect sense, though.
Yeah, because a friend of mine he used straw in his dog house, and his dog was covered with fleas in November.
Oh man!
And they couldn't figure out where they're coming from, and the vet says, "What bedding are you using?" He says, "Straw," and he says, "Get rid of it because that's where the fleas are hibernating in."
Oh my gosh!
And they're hatching in there.
Yeah, it's a bunch. They don't call it straw for nothing.
Right.
It is a straw. They live inside. All right.
Yeah.
Hey, Don. Thanks for the call, brother.
Take care.
All righty. Bye now. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, CamoX. Let's see who's next up. Let's go and talk with my friend Gary. Hey, Gary. Good afternoon. Welcome. How can I help, sir?
He's kind of got a question, also a comment about the bees, which might be helpful.
Yeah.
The question is, a friend of mine, he has at nighttime, he has like all kinds of thundering noise from his ducts when he turns the AC on, also when he had the heater on, all through the house and everything. So he's had his good old boy tech come out there and check in the daytime and says, well, everything looks okay to me, but the noise continues at nighttime whenever they turn on the furnace or the air conditioner. And he can't figure out what the problem is.
Let me think about this for a bit. Rumbling. Well, I'll tell you what, when the blower motor runs, and this is one of the reasons why I tend to run the fan all the time, is the starting and the stopping of that blower motor, tends to shake and, rumble. So I tend to leave my blower motor on winter, summer, 24/7, 365. I just run it. The issue there is how the ductwork is hung in a basement. So a forced air ductwork system typically gets nailed up either tight. The return ducts get nailed tight to the return air, and the supply ducts typically are supposed to hang down about an inch. Well, if the nails in the joists get loose, so if the suspension system for that big acoustical port, which moves noise very efficiently, those might need to be tightened down, number one. And then also mufflers are added. There is inside insulation. So insulating ductwork in it, when you get a new system put in, they oftentimes put a fibrous insulation that they glue to the inside of the sheet metal to quiet those noises, to keep the transfer of noises. If you think about the old steamships back 100 years ago, and the captain would open a pipe and he'd yell down the pipe to the, you know, the engine room below, that was just a ductwork metal sound transmitting system, which is exactly the same as a heating and cooling ductwork. So I would look into tightening up and make sure that you don't have anything moving, because it literally can. The blower motor can be a little off center. You can change that blower motor. Blower motors are inexpensive. They get changed out and they're the first thing to go. So frankly, that's, you know, it's a preventive maintenance thing. It's like, for me, it's like getting your oil changed or your water pump changed, you know, before it goes out. So there's that, securing and then muffling the noise.
Okay. This is a 1960 house with original equipment. And isn't it something that a regular professional HVAC company could probably discover and fix?
Well, I can almost answer it. If it's one of the old V-belt, you know, blowers with the radial, the you know, the bearings are going, I mean, 1960, those things, the bearings get worn just a little bit, and they're bearings just like in a car. You wear them out a little bit, and they will move and they'll flop, and it'll make a lot of noise. So those old blower motors, you know, with the V-belt and the pulleys and the motor, those are inherently very noisy.
Yeah, the last person just gave about a 10-minute inspection and said, well, it looks okay to me. So I think that they need to contact a better company.
Well, yeah, you know, or sooner or later you contact a better company, they're going to say, well, I can quiet it down. You need a new furnace, you know, because I need to replace the equipment, even though the furnace is fine. That, or just replace that blower motor. They can get, you know, they can change that out with a new direct drive quieter motor system. Yeah.
Can I give you a quick comment about the bees also?
Yeah, please.
We had a colony of bees in our garage. We called the Rottler.
Yeah.
And they came and they used a thermal imaging, and they actually took pictures of the bees, which were actually inside the wall of the garage.
Yeah.
So they couldn't really get to them. There was a hole where they were coming in.
Mm.
And Rottler said that they'd be glad to call like a beekeeper, except you have to cut like about a about a 6-foot hole in the garage.
Yeah.
Square to do that. So instead we opted, you know, for euthanasia of the bees, which worked out pretty good.
Well,
and,
see,
they came and they solved the problem there. They're fantastic. And when you go with the professionals, you just can't go. You might pay more money for it, but they do the job and they do it well.
Nice. Well, Gary, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thank you. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX, little help from our friends. Yep. So noisy ductwork can, if you have an old V-belt and pulley system with the motor, when that motor starts, number one, you know, it starts and it goes, you know, so it starts like a, you know, instant acceleration. That's a little noisy. And then those old blowers, I mean, from 1960 or 30-year-old blower, you know, or now more than that, you know, 70-year-old blower or whatever, an old type system, those things are inherently brand new, are very quiet, but when they age and get a little off-center or a kilter, they can be quite nosy. 314-436-7900 puts us together here on KMOX, or 800-925-1120. Bring on the phone calls. Let's get her going. We'll be back for more on University of KMOX. Yes, indeed. Scott Mosby here at your service. 50,000 watts of University of KMOX. This is the Helitech Home Improvement Show, and we have another 20 minutes. Stay tuned. 1 o'clock, top of the hour, we have news, weather, and sports. Then we've got Retire Ready, and then about 2 o'clock, we go to Cardinals pregame show right here on University of KMOX. Go Cards, and by the way, go Blues. Let's see what's cooking. Go to my friend and talk with Linda. Linda, good afternoon. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. You're okay. On KMOX. How can I help?
Okay. Sorry, my phone just got off. I apologize, but I tuned in a little late, and when I tuned in, there was a gentleman talking about an alternative to mudjacking. Mm-hmm. And I've got a pretty long driveway. You can get like 5 or 6 cars in there. And it's about 10 years old. It's in great shape. Mm-hmm. But where it hits my garage floor, it has sunk, I guess, or whatever, I don't know, like 2.5 inches, 3 inches.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that may be a problem eventually.
Yeah, Helitek does something called polyjacking, which is kind of the next generation. Instead of putting cement slurry, the old grout material we used to use 40 years ago, the new technology is kind of a foam polyester set, which is uses smaller holes to go through the concrete, things like that. But slab leveling, and frankly, the people say, well, I thought Helitek just did foundation. Well, the actual corporate name of Helitek is Slab Masters because they've been doing this forever. So they've been, they know all about this stuff. So it's polyjacking. Helitek does it, and it's a perfect opportunity for that place right by your front driveway, too.
Is that really expensive?
No, it's usually about half the cost of replacing that slab. That's generally rule of thumb for, polyjacking and such. So,
okay, thanks for your help.
Yep, you bet, Linda. And it's free to call. So, get them out there, see what it takes. It's, if you change the concrete, you wind up with a different color slab. So you miss all that problem with, mismatched colors. I'm kind of I like nice looking homes, and I kind of want the driveway to be all one color. So that's a big deal to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Have a great day. Thanks.
Okay, Linda, take care. Thanks for the call. Next up, let's see, talk to my friend Art. Hey, Art, Scott Mosby, how are you, my friend?
Good, Scott. Thank you. A question regarding my garage.
Mm-hmm.
My home is about 15 years old. It has an attached garage.
Okay.
Starting a couple of years ago, all of the drywall tape from the ceiling started coming down.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, I had someone come in, pull it all down, and retape it. And now I'm noticing in some places it's starting to do it again. Any thought on what's going on?
Wow. How well is your attic ventilated above that garage? Number one. And number two, how much moisture is in the garage? Three things can really boil that tape off. Number one, the dust or the drywall was not cleaned before originally taped. And that's why the first one might have come down. But retaping it the way you did, generally people that know what they're doing clean it up and get it ready to go pretty good. So that kind of rules that out. If you're steaming that drywall tape off of the drywall, oftentimes that's from inadequately ventilated attic spaces, in which case, for example, today the humidity after all this rain this week is very high in the air, and that's the air in your attic. Well, now we hit 88 degrees tomorrow. It's going to get pretty warm again, and then the sun, solar gain, cooks it up. You wind up with a steam pressure cooker in your attic without having proper holes in it to ventilate it, and that can boil the tape right off of the drywall in a garage. And the third thing is a lot of wet cars parked in there often. So if you have a 2 or 3 car garage, and it happens in the winter, you take the, this car's covered with snow from driving in the snow and ice, wet cars, that sort of thing. So sometimes ventilating or opening a window in the garage, drying it out, it matters too.
Okay, as far as ventilation, all I have right now is an end gable.
Yeah.
A vent in the end gable. Would you recommend the turbines or a ridge vent?
Neither. If you've got an end gable over the top of your garage, I would likely put soffit intake vents. Do you have an overhang down at the gutter eave line?
Yes, and there are vents in those.
Well, make sure that there's not plywood behind it, because about 70% of soffit installers don't remove the plywood underneath it. They just put the pretty stuff up. Well, they just don't understand the concept of the ventilation. They understand making things look pretty, so they do that, but they miss the most important part of all is, change the air, dry out the attic, quit boiling off your, drywall tape, stuff like that.
Right, right.
Yeah, so think outside the box, Don. You're kind of on your own with this because it could be several things. But my first one, almost always, and if you were to call Mosby out, we'd go right at the attic ventilation just to make sure that inspect what you expect. We'd get up in that garage and we'd look at the eaves and see if we're seeing light sources coming through those metal soffit covers. You see what I mean?
I do. Now, assuming for the moment that they just made them look pretty, how do you fix it at this point?
You take a few of those metal pieces down, and basically all they needed to do was cut holes in the plywood. We tend to remove the plywood so that the air moves around a little better. But the good ones cut holes in the plywood. The great ones remove the plywood because they understand, you know, the system. It's not just make it look pretty. It's, oh, by the way, you know, make your house healthy.
Right, right. Very good. So assuming for the moment that the soffit vents are functioning, then, again, I go back to my question in terms of next ridge vent, turbine preference.
Well, attic ventilation, I like ridge vent. The problem is if you already got gable vent, you cannot put gable vent and ridge vent together because the ridge vent will be the exhaust and the high gable vent will be the intake source. It will not suck the air through your eaves. You're lower down by the gutter line. It'll suck the air in 4 feet away and you'll have an incredibly well-ventilated top 4 feet. And the rest of the attic that really matters won't get any movement of air. You follow what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So you have to kind of noodle your way through this. There are a lot of rules that go with this, but, you know, if you could do a smoke test on where the air's coming from and where it's going, you'll know when you've got it.
Would insulating help any?
It wouldn't hurt. I like to insulate garages anyway, because frankly, when I pull a car in the middle of the winter, I've got this big engine block, and in a two-car garage, I've got two cars that are heating my garage. All I have to do is keep the heat. I don't need to make any. I brought it home with me in the car. So I love to insulate garages. They're, in my mind, they're a cheap date, you know? I mean, insulate, you know, and frankly, if I'm closing up or putting up pegboard or a slat wall or whatever, my golly, I love to insulate because, you know, even with electric cars, those electric motors are warm when you bring them home.
Sure, sure. Very good. Well, thank you, Scott.
Okay, Art, good luck, brother. You're kind of on your own noodling your way through this, but it's I think I've empowered you with enough goodies you can, you know, do something that's better than what you've got.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Good luck. Happy voyage.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
All right. Take care. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. We've got a few more minutes of the Helitech Home Improvement Show, and we're going to take a short pause, tell you some great stuff here on KMOX. Yes, sir. Back we are. Home Improvement, KMOX, 50,000 watts, and we're going to the phones. We're going to talk to Don. Hey, Don, good afternoon. Welcome. How can I help you, my friend?
Well, thank you, Scott. I really enjoy your show. I tuned in today just as you were referring to that leaving your fan run 24/7, 365.
Yes, sir.
You know, I heard that a long time ago, and my first thought was, isn't that going to really skyrocket your electric bill?
It will raise your bill, but only by $10 to $12 a month. It's not a lot. And my premise then is, if you're moving all the air, you're taking the hot spots and cooling them off and taking the cool spots and warming them up. If you average the temperature of the house by mixing the air more often, which happens when you leave the blower motor on, maybe that air conditioner comes on fewer times. Maybe that heat gets called for fewer times because you can get a cold pocket at the thermostat. The furnace says, whoa, we need to warm up the rest of the house. Well, the rest of the house may be fine. So the reason I like the blower motor to run and have in my house all the time, number one, it's filtering the air all the time. Number two, it's averaging out the hot and the cold spots. It's also freshening the air because I don't have any, you know, dead corners of humidity or whatever. And then the third point now with the ultraviolet light, you know, bacteria killer thing going on, that runs as well. So, you know, is that worth $10 or $15 a month to me? You betcha.
Well, yeah, it all that makes sense, and I would think especially so, perhaps in the winter, keep that air circulated. It might cause that furnace to kick on a little less.
Yeah,
and I've got high ceilings in the family room, and in the dining room, so the heat's all up in there. Maybe it'll keep that circulated a little better.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have more success than others because high ceilings are always underventilated. If you can turn
the only thing, I guess, other than that is maybe you have to change the filter a little more often.
Oh, that's a good thing. Well, either that or you can just, you know, blow your nose more often. You want the filter to do it or your nose. So, I don't know. I'm kind of banking on the filter for me.
Okay. Well, when I was in the car, when I walked in the house, the first thing I did was turn on my fan. And I'm going to give it a shot and just let that baby run and see what happens. Maybe my electric bill will go down a little bit.
Don, when I open my windows in my house, I leave the blower motor running. Who cares?
Yeah. All right. So. Well, hey, thank you again. I appreciate your information and great show, Scott.
All right. Thanks for the call, Don.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. And people say I'm crazy. It's like, Scott, turn the blower off. It's like, no, I'm moving. You know, the fresh air comes in unless it blows through the house and really ventilates well. You know, I just leave the windows open and the blower on. I turn the AC off or the heat off, whatever it is, so I'm not, you know, heating the outdoors or cooling the outdoors. But, you know, ventilation is ventilation. So I keep it going. Thanks, Don. Take care. Home improvements. Let's see who else. We got a quick one. How's about Ray? Ray, Scott Mosby here. How can I help? Got about a minute.
Scott, I'll make it quick. I have a 2.5-story house with dormers. It's all brick all the way through South City. It's got real small ventilation, few bricks missing in the attic, and that's it. But I've got dormers where I could put at the peak of those, put a vent, I guess, but then they're lower than the top of the ridge of the house. Like the dormers are lower than the top ridge. So would it make sense to on the sides where you've got brick all the way up to the top, put a vent there, and then on the opposite side, put vents, pop out brick at the other side lower. So let's say the attic's 12 feet tall, one side, 12 feet, vent on one side, and then two lower ones on the other side to create some sort of cross ventilation.
Ray, the way you're going at this is exactly right. Those dormers may be its own environment. And, you know, it depends whether the dormers are connected to the rest of the attic. So, but looking at it as pockets, that's the right way to go at this.
Okay. Does it make sense to put the one on one, on the north side, low ones, and on the south side, high ones, so that there's a natural ventilation from pulling the coal on one side and out the hot on the other side?
Yes. I'm going to have to go. I've got 5 seconds. Oh, wait a minute. I've got more. Yes, but you've got to, now you're into engineering. This is fluid dynamic design. So you really have to know what you're doing to attack a house like yours with dormers, story and a half, and all of that. You need a pro, frankly.
Oh, okay.
But the answer is the way you're thinking about this is, okay, I've got a dormer. It may be its own environment. And then the other dormer, so you need to vent it. Maybe differently than the other part of the house. But, you know, the way you're thinking about this is spot on, brother.
Okay. It is all one big open attic, so it's not like two pockets. They're just one big open attic.
Well, that may be the simple one with a ridge vent and lower supplies, or, you know, bump out your bricks and get some gable vents in there. But keep in mind, FAS free airspace, you need to know how much air is moving because you need to provide enough. Anyway, go at it, Ray, but I think you're going to need, you know, somebody pretty sharp in attic ventilation to help you with this. Scott Mosby, KMOX. See you next week here on University of KMOX.